Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com. Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 169 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sending you over to Jason Rugard for a rundown.
All right, guys, today on the show we'll be doing the box office prediction game, talking about the new James Bond film, Skyfall, and our predictions on that. Got some movie news for you. Harrison Ford says he might be open to possibly reprising the role of Han Solo in a future Star Wars installment. John Cusack is taking on the Rush Limbaugh biopic that's being put into production with his production company. And Nicolas Cage is rumored to be among the casting choices for Expendables 3, is Warner Brothers really considering a Casablanca remake? We'll be discussing that, as well as a possible director, yes, already, for Star Wars, the next installment, as well as Trevor's review for Wreck-It Ralph and us breaking down the weekend box office of November 2nd, 2012. First, let's do the game.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
Only one big wide release this weekend, right?
That's right. I noticed you're steering clear of last weekend.
Yeah, I didn't really want to talk about last weekend too much, but we can get into it here.
Yeah, I won big time.
Yeah, you kicked my ass last week. I think you might have actually taken the lead in the game based on my performance last weekend, though.
I don't know. I'll have to see. I don't know. I'm not sure.
It was pretty bad.
I haven't ran the numbers yet, but it's pretty, yeah. Actually, I don't know. I don't think that I've taken the lead. I bet you're still in the lead by a small margin, but still. Thank you for allowing me to have a chance to win.
Hey, she says it's good size.
Hey, you know, you didn't play it safe. There's only, you know, X amount of weeks left. What, like 8 or something? Ridiculous. Less than that, maybe, possibly.
I had like the lead all year, and then you're gonna sniff it out of me on the last day.
Well, you could have ran
Texas
it down.
Rangers.
I mean, Anyhow, Skyfall.
I played the high low game last week, and I want to justify something here. You landed on my number twice. I nudged on Wreck-It Ralph, and I shot myself in the foot. Not gonna happen this weekend, bud. Skyfall. What's going on with Skyfall? It's the only real major release.
So well across seas.
It's already made, $287 million internationally. It opened a couple weeks ago.
Smashing UK records, blah, blah, whatever. But that doesn't necessarily mean
anything. You
know, we're going to get $100 million opening here. Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, especially considering that foreign openings have been extremely odd. I mean, we've seen Battleship open really well across seas and then do nothing here. So
we saw the Expendables outgross Batman and Spider-Man in China.
Yeah, due to some constraints by the government over there, though, so. Perhaps unfair. I mean, didn't they do about the same as Battleship as well?
Yep. Strange taste.
Yeah, Battleship's still out there, yeah. But Skyfall, new James Bond, everyone seems to be excited about it. The reviews are really good. The bar is set at $70 million, which is not ludicrous because, you know, Quantum of Solace did about that. Although Casino Royale only did about 40 back in its opening, so.
But people were a lot more unsure about that entry, and it turned out to be the better one of the two. But
that's what I mean. Did you think Quantum of Solace hurt? I don't think it hurt it really.
I do. I think it's a huge fall from grace from the heights of Casino Royale to the abysmal nature of that one.
Is it going to hurt this?
No,
Skyfall, you think? I don't think it is. I think people are going to know this is a reboot, if you will.
I think the only thing that might hurt it, two things: the 4-year gap between Quantum of Solace and the release of Skyfall, that was back in 2008, and the 2-hour and 23-minute running time, although I hear it's very well done.
That hasn't hurt anything else that's been, you know, we've had longer movies as these blockbusters take over more and more. As every movie becomes a tentpole, it becomes about 2.5 hours long, right?
Well, particularly James Bond movies, because, you know, there's certain things like the pre-title sequence, obviously like the whole 3-minute Adele sequence where she's going to be singing over, you know, the montage that they always do. So there's particular things in the big stunt sequences that go on in these movies. I mean, even the Avengers was, 2 hours and 20 minutes nowadays. So
that's what I mean. You look at the Batman movies. I mean, it's become kind of okay again to have 2 and 45 minutes actually seems pretty standard nowadays. So I think that that's going to be okay. I think that it's good. Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first? What do you want to do?
I'll go first. You know, I'm feeling ballsy. I think this will be the biggest Bond opening in the history, unadjusted, of course, because if you go back and readjust some of those, like Thunderball made like $600 million in today's money. It did a, you know, massive business. But unadjusted wise, I'm going to say biggest opening in franchise history. I'm going to put it at $85 million. I'm feeling strong about this one.
Cool. I'm going to go 75.
Okay. But we still think it's both going to be the biggest Bond opening in history. Mm-hmm. And we do think, I think, at least, that this will be highest grossing in the whole series. I think the bar right now is $160, $170 million. And I think this is clearly going to go way over $200 million, especially since the last Mission Impossible did just about $205.
Yeah. Well, don't you think, I mean, you mentioned the four-year gap. I think that's kind of helped in a way. Like, it's almost revitalized it and maybe put enough distance between Quantum of Solace and this one. This feels like a kind of a brand new start again.
Yeah, the thing is, the omnipresent marketing here. I mean, the awareness here has got to be through the roof. Even people that aren't interested in seeing it know it's coming out. This is, and that music is so catchy. It's everywhere. It says something when nothing is going up against it. Although Twilight comes out next weekend, which we'll see another, probably even bigger opening than Skyfall.
I do think that there's one mistake they're making in the marketing for this, and you actually just said it right there. The other movie coming out, you called Twilight. This movie you called Skyfall. I've noticed a lot of issues where talking about Skyfall, people say, the fuck is Skyfall? It's the new James Bond. Oh. I think that's an issue. A little bit.
Yeah, we like to think that people are a lot more sophisticated than that, but studies have shown that they're not. So do your homework, and if you're going to see Twilight, go see Twilight. Don't buy a ticket for Skyfall and vice versa.
Well, I just mean you don't say Breaking Dawn Part 2 when you talk about Twilight, right? You say Twilight.
There was a research done recently that of public awareness. They said 72% awareness for the James Bond film, which meant, you know, 72% of the people polled knew it was coming out, which is incredibly high. And they said that the new Twilight film has an 88% awareness, which is absolutely through the roof, which is going to, I think, equate to a massive opening weekend.
That to me just sounds like an off skewed poll.
They might have been done at a mall.
In both sense to me, yeah. There's no 72% of jack shit anyone knows James Bond's coming out. Come on, because there's not even that close a percentage of any population is going to go see any one movie ever.
Well, Lincoln is coming out, to be fair, but it's only on 11 screens. It's a soft release before they go nationwide.
We're going to do that next week when it goes wide.
All right, let's move on to the movie news.
Okay.
Let's talk about the least interesting. Let's go right from the top. You know, fuck it.
Yeah, where are you
going
to start?
I'm going John Cusack. You know how tall John Cusack is in real life? This guy's like 6'4". I saw him in person once, and he smokes like a tree, he was next to the tree that I call Lily Zabriskie. I saw him at the premiere once, a movie called Max, and this guy's 6'4", very imposing, 6'4". John Cusack, you know, might drop a bone on somebody. Anyways, all right, he's going to do Rush Limbaugh movie. What's the deal here? Does he have any sort of connection to Rush Limbaugh? Why would he pick this subject? Is there an interest from anybody? Would you see this movie?
I don't know. No, I don't. You know, I kind of understand the Howard Stern movie because Howard Stern's a colorful guy and he's got an interesting backstory. But just, you know, no, I don't care about Rush Limbaugh. He's just, you know, a pundit that... does anyone care? I don't want to know his story.
He's had a problem with addiction. He battled addiction. He's had a lot of problems in the media, I guess somewhat colorful life, if you will. And this is going to be directed tentatively by Bette Davis, who was behind that Private Parts Howard Stern movie. So I think they are going in that direction. But what this reminds me of is a really good talk show type movie called Talk Radio with Eric Bogosian, an old Oliver Stone movie from the mid-80s, which is fantastic. And I think one of the really underrated movies of Stone's career. But I think if they could do it in that vein with Cusack and his rapid-fire speech pattern and, you know, his kind of intellectual gamey plays on screen, it could be really good. I mean, I like Cusack as an actor. I think he's underrated at times.
But, I mean, Rush Limbaugh's a real son of a bitch, though.
I know. I wonder what kind of...
I mean, I don't know if I care. Like, I get it. I know what he is. I get it. I don't know that I would want to know anything more about it. Whereas, yeah, I mean, Howard Stern's a real son of a bitch as well, and he's a, you know, a weird guy. But at least he's quirky and likable. Rush Limbaugh, there's nothing likable about him.
I wonder
at all. That's what, and he plays off that very well. You know, it's kind of his whole stance and just who and what he is, but. I don't. Does it care? Does that create a character that we want to know about? For me, no.
Well, Limbaugh's people have signed off on the project. I mean, they've confirmed this is, you know, in the works right now. So this obviously has his blessing. You wonder how much of a warts and all look this is going to be when a guy like that, who's so protective of his public image at this point, you know, he's had so many problems.
Well, he's not protective of all of his public image. I mean, he said many times that he doesn't fight with people anymore. He doesn't try to clear anything up because it's impossible. He said that many times. He's just going to say whatever he wants to say. And whatever anyone runs with in the media against him, he's got no problem. Because he's such an asshole. I mean, if you're going to say all that kind of stuff, then yeah, after a while, it kind of would. I would imagine it would be tiring fighting people to call you an asshole if you are an asshole.
Well, we know that. We're going to call assholes every day.
You're just going to, yeah.
We
after
do a
while,
show like
you
this.
Just give up, right? You just say, hey, all right, you're right. I am an asshole.
We agree with you all. We are assholes.
But you're going to do that anyway. So he doesn't. So yeah, I don't know really what they would do about it. I mean, everything about him has really come out, as you've said, like the colorful past. Like, really, everyone tries to find dirt on Rush Limbaugh because he's so hated.
Yeah, he's got a lot
of hate. So I wonder, this could be an interesting look. They did make that Bush movie, talking about Oliver Stone, that was really good, and Bush was hated. So maybe it'll be a good movie, and I'll have to eat my words.
This will probably end up in the red box heap, to be honest with you. It's probably never even see that light of day. I mean, Cusack is now been in a string of movies that have come out on the DVD circuit, in The Raven, which escaped that, looked like it was destined for the DVD circuit.
Yeah, these movies about people like this often get overlooked. So,
all right, let's talk about Harrison Ford.
Harrison.
I mean, isn't Harrison Ford just about a pace behind Clint Eastwood for the curmudgeon-y old bastard role?
Yeah, Han so old here.
Yes, I mean, this is a guy who's notoriously been difficult to work with. I mean, I used to love Harrison Ford growing up. Obviously, Indiana Jones, Han Solo. That was a big deal when I was a kid. I made great movies all through the 80s and 90s. And then really just kind of fell out of favor, it felt like, after a while. And now he seems so pissy all the time in interviews, kind of like the Tommy Lee Jones scenario, that I was surprised when they announced that he was possibly open to coming back and reprising Han Solo in some sort of capacity in a future Star Wars installment. That really blew me away because he seems so irritated anytime Star Wars is brought up to him.
Well, I don't know how. I mean, I hope none of the. Well, first of all, we still don't know where the healthy stories are at, right? Because they say, first of all, George Lucas comes out and says, you know, this stuff's all well and good and decided. You know, the storylines are there. And the outlines and everything's all set up for these movies. And then Disney says, well, we're going to do whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah, not so.
So who knows? I mean, George Lucas apparently has been talking to Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison, I guess, to some degree about these new movies that are coming out. Obviously to prepare them and for, you know, the media slew that's about to attack them, which we're seeing happening now. But Mark Hamill's so old. I mean, Carrie Fisher looks like a soccer mom. She looks nothing like her younger self. She looks like an old.
She looks like a soccer mom who's been drinking out in the sun for about 25 years.
Yeah, I know, but she looks like an old. She just looks like an old lady, you know. To be honest with you, and which is fine. Everyone ages and everything. I got no problem with that. But she's not Princess Leia anymore. You know, not even close. Like Mark Hamill's. I mean, I guess Harrison Ford's the closest in line with his character still because he was kind of old back then, but. He's really old now, right? What could he possibly do but a cameo at best?
I just wonder what avenue they're going to take here because these characters. First of all, this was discussed with them back in August. It's come out that Lucas told them sometime in August this was going to be happening. Like you said, to prepare them for when it all transpired. And I wonder if he's been in touch with them more to do with ancillary rights and kickbacks they might receive on certain things. If it's all business oriented, or if it has anything to do with the creative side, because they really haven't said anything other than they've been in talks with Lucas. So it remains to be seen what they'll be doing in any installments. And, you know, to add more speculation and more gas to the fire here, there's been rumors of a director already lined up for this next installment. And who would that be? Who is that? Who are they rumoring?
Well, they're rumoring. And the logic to get to this is a little ridiculous. But yeah, they're saying Matthew Vaughn is possibly going to be this, namely because he dropped out of X-Men First Class right at the perfect moment. They link him to this through 20th Century Fox, which has distribution rights to the first six films. And I don't know how the fuck that links anything to anybody else, but
I mean, you could easily say that Andrew Stanton, who did John Carter, is next up in line for this. I mean, he's in-house at Disney. He's in their good grace, even after the debacle that was Carter, the $200 million write-off, you know. They don't mind that he's back there working for them. I believe he's doing, more work for them as we speak. So it's the guessing game, the revolving door of who we say. You had a nice suggestion off-air who you thought should be the man behind the series. Who was that?
Oh, God. All jokes aside, I think they should get a really horrible action director, personally, is what I think. You know, like John Moore or I don't know who else.
You said just, Brett Ratner off
Yeah, air. Brett Ratner would be great. Wouldn't that be an awesome Star Wars movie, Brett Ratner? They would do like some kind of a heist, in the Death Star or something.
I'm sure that Ben Stiller would show up in some capacity.
It's already ruined at this point. I mean, they've made too many of these stupid movies.
It's a franchise.
We're going to wind up, before we, wind up in the ground, where there's going to be like 20 Star Wars movies.
Yeah, as I keep saying, though, the Star Wars, and Lucas has said this too, is not for us any longer. You pass it down. And as much as I have problems with the younger movies, or the newer movies, I should say, younger audiences don't. They look at them with fresh eyes, and they think that our stuff is the old stuff. So it keeps changing and evolving, and Star Wars is still relevant this many years later because it has done that. So I have to give that franchise or that property some credit for reinventing itself in a way. But it also has, Lucas has really distanced himself from the core fans. If you've ever seen that documentary, People vs. George Lucas, and all the shenanigans he's pulled since, it's a love-hate relationship with him and with the whole property for me now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how often do you ever feel like going back and watching a Star Wars movie? Does it ever hit you? It's more of when it's on, I catch it nowadays.
I mean, if I ever go back to watch any Star Wars, it's only the original three, and the other three I don't care about.
I feel like
I'm going to get the same thing out of these new ones as I did the new ones.
Well, we're being Debbie Downers on Star Wars here, but it doesn't look good right now with what Disney's got going on. But then again, Marvel had the same thing going on, and they made some good flicks there through Disney. So we'll see how this tangled web unfolds. Let's take a quick break and come back with more news.
Have you gone to the Movie Mavericks Facebook or Twitter page? I thought not. Do this now, and be sure to follow and like us. It's good for you and for the penguins.
Fuck the penguins.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about a classic. Casablanca. What do you think on Casablanca?
I thought you were talking about Expendables. Yeah, Casablanca. Personally like Casablanca a lot.
So do I. I'm surprised. I mean, we watched this. I was subjected to it with you in film school. I don't know. Did you see it prior to?
Yeah.
Okay. I had never seen it prior to the film school. And we saw it many times there. We had to dissect that in certain parts. And I really grew a fondness for this movie, more so than really any of the other classics that we were exposed to, including a lot of the Hitchcock stuff I had never seen.
For what it is and for how old it is, it's in black and white. A lot of these old movies are really freaking boring. This one's not. It's really good. It's well acted. It's
staged
well.
Very staged. Very. You're right. A lot of older movies are very paced and measured. And you wonder, because there was not a lot of television back then, if they just wanted to spend 3 hours in a movie theater. And this one is a short. It's to the point. It's got a lot of throwaway lines that have now become part of pop culture. Played against Sam and Hill of Beans and things like that. But really damn good movie. But they're talking about, because of the 70th anniversary of this film's release coming back around, they're talking about possibly commissioning a sequel. I guess the original writer had done a draft in the 80s that took place 20 years after the original movie ended, and they couldn't get the project off the ground then, but they're attempting now to get it off the ground, or there may be some interest. It's kind of confused here what the actual, like how much interest is in from Warner Bros., what stage this is in.
Well, it's not in a stage, right? This is the same project that the granddaughter of, you know, Harry Warner brought to the studio a couple years ago, I think, and they passed on it then. They've wanted to make it, there's been interest in a sequel to Casablanca for years, a long time, longer than this decade, right?
Well, yeah, for at least 50
years,
right?
And they've just never
years?
Found anything worth it. And so, yeah, Howard Koch wrote something, I guess, at some point, and she picked it up. She, this granddaughter, Cass Warner, took some class with this guy. So, I don't know. It all seems a little... I don't know. We went to film school. This sounds exactly like some shit that happens in film school, right?
Yes.
Some student gets to know the teacher really well, and then they want to emulate them in some way, and she got stuck on this Casablanca shit.
And making a sequel to one of the most highly regarded films ever is very, very difficult. I mean, we talked about Raging Bull 2 coming out, you know, which they obviously had to change the name and how much of a ripoff that was. And that is... I mean, at least that's an outright cash grab. When you have the original studio and they have maybe a script from the guy who wrote the original, the stakes become so much more. You're talking about Godfather 2 territory now. You know, you're talking about aliens.
Right, well,
you're talking about big stuff.
I mean, you remember in the early 80s, they did have a very short-lived Casablanca television show.
Did they? I didn't know that.
Howard Koch did a couple episodes. You know, is what it lasted. So there's always been interest in Casablanca. From Warner Brothers. I guess this thing would be called Return to Casablanca.
Oh, man.
Which sounds like a pretty good title for this, because it sounds like a sequel from the 50s, doesn't it?
It sounds like Return to Oz. Remember that piece of shit?
Yeah.
That was bad.
Return to Casablanca.
Gotcha, bitch, is what it should be called.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to watch. At this point, it's too long. You know, let sleeping dogs lie.
I think that's a better title for the movie right there if they do it. All right, we'll keep you updated on this. At this point, it's just rumor, as a lot of our news is nowadays. It's just all rumor. But speaking of another rumor, and this has been, I guess, not totally confirmed yet, although they are in the stages of talking, Nicolas Cage is going to be part of the Expendables, maybe? Stallone says it's going to happen.
People are saying confirmed. I mean, Stallone, I guess, has said that this is happening. So I guess we're going to get Nicolas Cage.
Well, his Cage is...
3, which, I don't know, do we want an Expendables 3? Is Stallone going to be in the third one?
I don't know. I think he's handing off the series one way or another. Maybe in the role that Schwarzenegger was in this last one.
I mean, certainly Statham could continue the franchise on his own at this point, because they don't... I just don't see any reason for any of these characters to be in there. And Statham's young enough to where he's going to be able to do, you know, 10 more of these damn things.
Mm-hmm. And they seem to want to keep making these. We talked about the female version they're spinning off, now Expendables 3, and they're still talking about how possibly getting even Harrison Ford, and then, of course, Wesley Snipes would be the end of the dream team there. But so far, Nicolas Cage's manager has said that a deal has not been set in place, but they are in talks. I can't believe that he just isn't outright saying yes, because Cage is committed to so many other projects at this point. Why not just say, yeah, Expendables is on the table? I mean, you can't leave the
beans. I mean, he's talking, Stallone said confirmed Nicolas Cage, right? But he's also, again, started up the rumor mill, as he's been doing successfully, you know, getting Expendables, keeping it in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard, and he specifically mentions Harrison Ford, Wesley Snipes, and Mickey Rourke, again, for the third one, as possible, as wanting to go out and get them. So, I mean, this Snipes, I think, would be a slam dunk, right?
I think that's a great idea, although he's obviously in prison for another 6 months, I believe.
Yeah, but they wouldn't. I think that they'd be fine enough for him to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't started shooting and they don't have a script. But he's saying that this is a... he's calling this a saga now. He says...
That's kind.
He says, we will continue with the same narrative scheme, the agility, and the frenzy which are inherent to the saga. Which to me means... We're not learning lessons here, that we're not actually making good movies.
As much as
we're just making things that people are hyped enough to go see, but not hyped enough to say, oh, this was actually good after they saw it.
Yeah, nothing that will endear itself. I mean, you said to me, if I may share a story here, you're watching a bull riding tournament or something. And mm-hmm. One of the announcers, which I have no idea why you watched that, but one of the announcers said that one of the competitors was the Ivan Drago of bull riding. And we had talked about how iconic that it transcends all sports. And if you look at some of those Stallone films, notably the Rambos and Rockies of that period, they have lasting power 25 years later. They're still American movie classics. They're, you know, they're in the lexicon of speech. So it's crazy to think about that. And then you see something like the Expendables. And as much as I want to like those movies, even as a deep rooted fan, they're totally disposable pieces of entertainment. I mean, they're evaporative.
He goes on to end his little Facebook, thing with, for now we are not as expendable as it should, and as some critics want. Which seems to be a slap in the face. But again, I say he's not learning what. I don't know. He's a good screenwriter, but he makes mistakes, too big mistakes. I don't know. I think sometimes, you know, you get a little full of yourself. To be fair, it's not just him. We saw all actors kind of from his era fade out because they couldn't adapt.
And he has survived. Let's be honest.
Well, he's come back.
Yeah, you know? He's weathered storms. And I got to give him credit.
They all have survived, and they're all having a resurgence in a way right now, that, in due part to him specifically, and even with these Expendables movies. But still, now we have another shot at it, and then we keep making the same mistakes we already made before. I mean,
not a big fan of the term agility and frenzy, because I thought that was what was hindering those two movies in the first place. I mean, there's an agility, a frenziness to Rambo that is precious to that movie, that make that movie a fucking gem. Rambo 4, the last part, I think. And I'm not talking about the director's cut, and all due respect to Sly, I think the director's cut of The Expendables 1 is better than the theatrical cut, but I do think that the director's cut of Rambo is not as strong as that theatrical cut. I think that his first instincts were better on that. I think he should maybe Passion's cooled and he made a retooled version, but that first Rambo cut is so pristine. I love that action and frenzy. Expendables 1 to me was just a bore after a while, you know.
And so was the second one. There was no emotion. Where like in Rambo and in Rocky, there's so much emotion in those characters and what they're doing. It's so, I don't know, justified in a way, right? All their hard work and all the action and that frenzied and agility and all that stuff is just backed up. Whereas in Expendables, it's just, let's shoot shit, say a one-liner that's not even very clever, and then shoot more stuff. And I'm thinking, this is just, I'm just watching target practice.
Well, it seems as a grab. They're grabbing moments here. Let's grab a moment here, grab a moment there with all these guys on set, and we'll put it together later. Where it didn't feel as thought out, but here we go on Expendables. But so
I was going to say.
You know, we're off on a ramp. If you stayed with us, thank you. We appreciate that. And we'll be talking about this more as the story progresses.
We only talk because we love.
Love you, Sly.
I want a good Expendables 3.
Let's take a break and come back with Trevor's review for Wreck-It Ralph.
Go to MovieMavericks.com for all your movie needs. It's pretty, like me.
MovieMavericks.com.
Can someone tell me what the hell a movie maverick is?
And one more thing about Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, exactly, right? Seriously, I mean, just talking about the... I won't even say it. Launching the whole Cloud Atlas thing again.
God, well, you went to the total antithesis of that and saw Wreck-It Ralph this weekend.
I saw Wreck-It Ralph this weekend, which was very good. The nice Disney movie. The best, you know... The best anyone's done to ape Pixar. Hey,
you like that aping, don't you?
Hey,
that's a gorilla fuck.
But which makes sense because John Lasseter's now in charge of all of Disney Animation, so he was executive producer on this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it was good. I give it 3 out of 4 stars. Solid film. Little boring in the beginning. It takes a while to get started, and then once it does, it's pretty good. And by the end of it, you realize that. There was someone was smart who actually was writing it. Whereas throughout a lot of the movie, I was thinking, God, this is a kid's movie. Yeah, this is fun. And then all the payoff started to happen. And I realized, oh, yeah, they're totally trying to do a Pixar thing here. And they're actually paying attention to stuff. It's just not as original feeling as a Pixar movie, I guess. That's how I would say it.
It did look like it was a notch below the Pixar stuff. But then again, everything can't be that kind of bar of... greatness, if you will. How is it incorporating you know, iconic video game characters. They do a pretty good job of that.
They don't really do that very much. You know, I thought there was going to be more of that. It's in there to a degree. It's funny, but it's not a lot. And, you know, it's mostly to do with Wreck-It Ralph. There's really only three video games they go into: the Wreck-It Ralph game, which is whatever, Mr. Fix-It or something. Mm-hmm. And they go into a Sugar Rush game, which is like a Candyland game, but it's like Super Mario Kart, where they drive around and and get things. And then he goes into a first person shooter action game with that's about space marines attacking giant bugs.
It's like Starship Troopers knockoff or what?
Yeah, kind of like the Starship Troopers thing. I don't know. It's just a basic, just your basic person shooter game. I don't know.
You recommend it though?
I would recommend it, especially if you have, you know, younger kids. Boys would like it. Girls would like it. It speaks to all demographics in that sense, and it's fun.
And how are the voices?
Yeah, everyone does a good job. They fit their characters. The animation's good. It looks very Pixar-ish. So,
is it a 3D deal?
Yeah, it was in 3D. I saw it in 2D, but it's also in 3D.
It looked okay. No need for 3D, basically.
No, I mean, maybe. I kind of felt like I kind of wanted to see it in 3D.
Wow, that's two times now recently. You said you wished Cloud Atlas in 3D and this.
And this. But the visuals were so good. And I think that in this as well, because it's a 3D animated movie, I've never, aside from Toy Story 3, I've never not seen a 3D animated movie in 3D with the glasses and everything and been, you know, let down by it. I've always thought that it's the 3D has helped because they're able to manipulate it so well. Mm-hmm. So it does add a little bit more depth to that cartoony type look. So I would probably have seen this in 3D if I had a chance.
All right. So a positive 3-star review from Trevor Anderson on Wreck-It Ralph, 3 out of 4 stars from him. And he says, get out there and see it. So suitable for families, obviously, and we'll keep adults entertained. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. So it's just one of those perfect family Pixar-ish type movies.
Which means it'll probably play very, very well in the coming weeks, especially leading up to the holiday.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's jump in the box office and discuss Wreck-It Ralph.
Let's take a look at this web of intricate numbers and digits. It's quite overwhelming. Now for a complete breakdown and analysis.
Box Office Weekend Breakdown.
All right.
So Wreck-It Ralph wrecked shop over the weekend.
He did. He did it pretty decent. Let's do it. The bar was set at 45. I said 52. You said 38. You took a gamble there.
I did. An $11 million gamble.
Yeah, it did 49, which really isn't all that surprising based on what it looked like. It was obviously emulating the Pixar stuff. You know, it had John Lasseter's name on it, had the Disney name on it. And with kids' movies doing so well lately.
Yeah, it's opened up higher than Hotel Transylvania did a couple weeks back. $49 million is one of the stronger openings of the year. Didn't hit that, you know, bar that Pixar usually gets between 55 and 60 million or up. Right. But it does look like it will have a nice multiplier. I could see this hitting $200 million or thereabouts very easily in its run.
Yeah, and these kids' movies always do well on home video.
Just to have a quick note, side note here, it does have almost double the production budget of something like Hotel Transylvania, which cost about $85 million, and this has a reported production budget of $165 million. So,
well,
costs substantially more.
I can say the difference between that is that the Hotel Transylvania looked far cheaper.
Yeah, even in the previews you could tell that.
I mean, maybe it doesn't matter, right?
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so in second place, Flight. Now, if I had known Flight was only opening up in 1,800 screens, I mean, they haven't done this with a major release. Should have done my homework a little bit better before sticking my foot in my mouth. I went high on the game. I believe the bar was $25 million. Is that right?
The bar was 25. I said 22. You said 29. It did 24.9. So, right. I mean, we were right in the middle, basically, of us.
Yeah, but this performed extremely strong for how many theaters this was in. It is nice to see that they don't have to roll this out into 3,000 screens right away. You know, they're taking the slow roll. This was made for incredibly cheap, $31 million, they're saying, just production value, not in marketing, because everybody took back-end participation deals. They really were pushing to get this script made, and it looks like it's going to be a gamble. It's going to pay off. This will play fantastic. Word of mouth has been great so far. Easily going to make $100 million. Easily.
Very similar. I mean, I think when you have a movie like Argo setting the stage so well, people want to go out and see another movie similar to that, Flight.
Well, we say, you know, you see a good movie, it makes you want to see another good movie. Argo's good. Cloud Atlas is
this. I saw Wreck-It Ralph. I watched People Like Us. I finally watched, which I've been putting off because it's 2 hours long. Watched that right after I watched Wreck-It Ralph. So that's a long time for something like People Like Us. It's actually a very good flick as well.
I got to check that one out.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, that's exactly what it does, right? You know, one good movie, which is Mission Impossible 4, we'll constantly be talking about this movie forever because it caused a huge surge in the box office.
Well, yeah.
And with movies after it.
Mm-hmm. Even Sherlock Holmes, which I think rode its coattails a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of Argo, in the third spot, holding nicely, dropping only 15% this week. It had $12 million last week and dropped only down to $10 million. It is now at $75 million, pacing ahead of where The Town was at and its comparative run. Really just, I mean, for something that opened up with $19 million, this is looking to be probably landing, I'd say, in the $110 million range at this point, and that's if pre-Oscar push, if it's not out on DVD by then. Great, great legs.
15% drop.
Unbelievable.
Awesome, yeah. The Man with the Iron Fist surprised you, I think. It surprised Joe and probably a lot of other people as well. I said 7 million, you said 5.5. The thing did 7.9,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is right in line with the names involved in it, I guess. It
opened up stronger than Dread, which surprised me because I really liked Dread. But I want to share a minor story here, and I think this speaks volumes of why this movie opened so well. Somebody was showing me on their iPhone the trailer for this movie. And, you know, I kind of played along and act like I didn't know what they were showing me. And they said, look, Quentin Tarantino made this. It's very deceptive to people when they see that Tarantino Presents and it's on purpose. They are under the impression it's a Tarantino movie. We talked about the tea room looking like the Kill Bill sequence with Lucy Liu. I think a lot of people, regardless of how good the movie is or how bad it is, a lot of people that glance at things, take it in and that he made it. I think that helped this week. I think it's going to fall by almost 70% next weekend.
Oh, God, yeah.
But, you got to say, at least it opened. So, well done for RZA and for Universal and at least getting the martial arts genre seen on one of the widest bases it has been in quite some time. You know, we get Taken, which is kind of a martial arts movie in a way. You get fighting skills. But this was a straight-up kung fu movie. So I'm glad to see that they're still making these things.
Well,
it's been a while since
Asia, man, they make them all the time.
I know, but I mean, it's been a long time.
It's not a dying art, by far.
We haven't had any in the American box office for quite some time. Straight-up
kung fu. That's because they're usually not very good.
This reminds me of the days when we had the Van Damme releases, like The Quest and things like that. So
we get things that are in the vein of this kind of stuff, and it's typically like Jonah Hex, And just put martial arts in Jonah Hex, and that's basically what these movies are. And that's why we never watch them, because the majority of them aren't very good.
Mm-hmm. I will see this, though. I want to see this.
Yeah.
Right, Taken 2.
Nice
drop for the weekend. 23% drop, less than a quarter percent drop in 5 weeks. Release.
That's a Neeson drop.
Yeah, right? 5.9 for its fifth weekend, and now it rests at $125 million. A very healthy $125 million. I think over $300 million globally, if I'm not mistaken here, or just thereabouts. $336, let me correct myself, on a $45 million budget. You got to imagine that Fox is already doing whatever they can to get Neeson. And
how do you tell nowadays? I guess you just make sequels no matter what, but this was the sequel we touted earlier that no one asked for. But how can you tell anymore?
Yeah.
Because apparently everyone wanted this.
Even with
nobody
the shitty
for it.
Cinema score, word of mouth was fantastic on this, which it still is. I mean, when you got 5.9, I even heard some people saying it was better than the first. Unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
All right, unfortunately,
Cloud Atlas.
In the
Fuck
sixth
you all for not going and seeing this.
Yeah, Trevor and I, although we both gave you a high rating for this movie, but we gave it with the stipulation that we can't, guarantee you'll like it. And I thought this was going to be the weekend that Cloud Atlas was going to hold steady. I expected, a 20% drop in this, and thought maybe it could do around 7 or 8 million It had a 44% hold, which isn't terrible given the subject matter, the running time, and all that, but looks like this will be a box office, big box office.
I mean, this is a huge failure, yeah.
Yeah, there's no way you can spin
this. It really
is.
This is such a big failure that they're not reporting, like they're trying to not say how much it costs.
It's well over $100 million.
Oh, by far.
Yeah.
But
what can save this is a strong international run, but it would have to make, because this looks like a little closeout here with under $30 million, which is a staggering loss. So it'll have to make, you know, $200 million across seas to be a big write-off. But
yeah, this was really expensive. This is really too expensive even to be something of value to the library, you know, later on. Oh, this is a great movie to have in your library.
And we don't know if this will play into the Oscar season, which could help a bump of some sort, a minor
but
bump. But at this point,
I mean, what, you got makeups, you know, it really would be about it, right? Special effects, makeup, maybe some sound. I mean, maybe.
I'm not playing with you when I would say that you could make an argument for Hanks in some capacity up for an Oscar.
Yeah, I don't know. That'd be a stretch, though, wouldn't it?
I mean,
with
makeup's a
Argo, with Flight, with such strong competition in the awards season right now.
I think you're also
for these first awards movies out now are going to make triple digits.
You're missing editing too. I say editing; it's up for editing as well.
Okay. Yeah, I mean that would be something I would agree on. Yeah, that. I mean the score's really good as well.
Yeah. See.
But I'm just saying this is going to be a very interesting Academy Awards because we're going to have movies that are actually worthy of being up.
Well, I think you got three movies right now in wide release or playing, you know, relatively wide that are going to be in the topic of Oscar nominees come January. So get out and see them now while you can.
Yeah. Hotel Transylvania.
Didn't fall as hard as
number
I thought
seven
it would.
Spot. 4.4 million, dipped 53% this weekend. Total 137 so far.
Not a bad
just
hole.
Just 85 budget, like you said.
Considering that Halloween has passed and Wreck-It Ralph is out, which is direct competition, this thing has made a very, very impressive amount.
Yeah.
Paranormal Activity 4 collapsed 50%, which is also not a terrible breakdown, but what the real story here is now 4.2 million in its third week. It sits at 49 million or less than the opening of part 3. This really goes to show
you. I was just going to say, yeah, this is really collapsing.
That this interest in this series is waning. I mean, this is, you can say huge success because $5 million budget and it's going to do fantastic across seas.
Two sequels coming out. Just going off this, I mean, a spinoff and a direct sequel, you know, those are the last two nails in this coffin, aren't they?
You're looking at, they'll stop making these when they gross about $10 million a piece, which is not far off.
Actually, yeah, not too far off. Yeah.
All right, Here Comes the Boom continues to have a quietly impressive run. You know, and didn't do anything out of the box. I thought this had a chance at making $100 million when we had an episode a while back, much like Alex Cross, which fell apart. But this opened up with, $11 million, $10 million 4 weeks ago. It's held steady each week. Its decline has been nice. It's made $35 million so far. It looks like it's going to have about a four-time multiplier, which would be impressive if it opened up any good.
Yeah, you know, but what is impressive about Kevin James is that all of his movies have
great legs,
decent multipliers. Yeah, very good legs, surprising legs for how shitty they are.
Yeah, it's the opposite of the Sandler effect, you know, which falls heavy, opens big, and then falls heavy. This opened up very small and held well, but we also saw this got a cinema score of A, so word of mouth was very good on this. And it's probably a decent little movie. It just got mismarketed, lost in the clutter, whatever you want to say. But
it feels like a home video rental, doesn't it? And Kevin James has never been truly enormous on screen, except for like Paul Blart. And that was like a Napoleon Dynamite. Wouldn't those never pan out for people?
I think we have a good shot of talking about this when we do the most rented titles of Redbox next year.
Yeah, that's true. Silent Hill Revelation 3D Super Duper Awesome Sauce, number 10.
Biggest drop in the top 10. Decline
3.2 million, yeah, well, it's a stupid ass name. 60% drop, basically. 13.8 million so far. This is a real dud. I thought this was going to be slightly better, but
no. This I knew
this is
no heat
the
coming
sequel
off this.
No one asked for, and apparently no one wanted.
Yeah, then talk about a more red box fodder. This is just a totally forgettable horror film, which is a genre that's littered with forgettable stuff, and really failed to even make. In the wake of things like Paranormal Activity and Sinister and things like that, really just was the lesser of all of them. Dropping out of the top 10, a couple movies to talk about had notable runs. Pitch Perfect ending its box office run, or dropping out of the top 10 at least. It's now at $55 million. Looks like it'll hit about $60 million, right about what you and I said it would do when it was first hitting wide. Mm-hmm. A good, profitable little movie for Universal. And Sinister for Summit Lionsgate, which cost a paltry $3 million to make and has really been on par with what Paranormal Activity 4 is making at this point. It's now resting at $44 million. This is quietly... had a great run as well. You said this one had a chance at $100 million. I scoffed. It actually outgrossed Paul Blart. So, kudos to you on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to hit $100 million or even
no,
close,
but it's still very impressive, and it will...
It's a big horror movie, and,
It's only a couple million behind where Paranormal Activity 4 is, and that's very impressive, considering...
We'll get a sequel to Sinister, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. All right, also, worth mentioning is Alex Cross... finishing off its abysmal run here.
Oh.
Dropping 61%. This absolutely has no legs, no audience, no interest whatsoever. $23 million. My first big misstep of the season. It has started my box office collapse during our game. This is the beginning of it all. Damn Alex Cross.
Well, we'll see how big Bond can get.
I think it's a big boner.
You might win. We don't know.
I think it's as big as Fast Five. That's what I based my projection off of. What'd you use there as a barometer, out of curiosity?
I just used Casino Royale, just going off of what that and Quantum of Solace did.
Okay.
I mean, adjusted Quantum of Solace did about 75, and I figure, you know, I just can't imagine that there's been any growth in viewership for James Bond. For people who want to go see it.
Worldwide, there obviously has been. We'll see about here on...
Yeah, but worldwide is growing in general for everything. That's why it's not a good barometer anymore. I don't even know what the hell worldwide is going to do.
Yeah, as we see markets, you know, expand and more theaters go up across the world, we don't know what hits anymore. All right, I think that wraps up our episode for 169. We want to thank you all for joining us once again. Our back catalog can be listened to on TalkShoe, Podbean, all sorts of different things. Stitcher.
And Stitcher. Don't forget the Stitcher. Now we love We're our on Miro Guide now.
That's right.
What, iTunes? Yeah, iTunes. That's a big one.
That's right. If you're over there on iTunes, rate the show, review the show on whatever platform you are using. And also, give us some feedback if you'd like. You can write to us at Trevor@MovieMavericks or Jason@MovieMavericks. Also, visit the site for the latest reviews. We've got a bunch of new stuff up over there, articles and trailers. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back with you soon. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Thank you for listening to the Movie Mavericks podcast.
Are you candy asses still here? Beat it. The show's over. The big man has left the building.